Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan MacLeod. I must say, I didn't expect to be back in the Ultron boardroom just a month. In fact, it's exactly a month to the day after recording a podcast with Robbie Fenter. Ultron announced a day after that, after we recorded that podcast, that Mteto Nyati, the former MTN South Africa CEO, would take over as group CEO of Ultron. And now here I am back at Ultron to talk to Mteto, who is now 4 days into the job.
I'm 4 days in the job, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Duncan. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Mteto, I've known you for a long time. I was actually thinking on the drive over here that I think I first met you when you were heading up outsourcing at IBM.
That is correct.
And that must have been 10, 12 years ago now?
Yeah, more than 12. Yeah, maybe 12 years ago. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so... Yeah. You've done a lot in the last decade, IBM, Microsoft, MTN, and now Ultron.
Yes.
But Mteto, I thought as a good starting point on this podcast, I have known you for a long time, but I don't know your full backstory.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? Where were you educated?
Duncan, I come from the Eastern Cape. I was born in Amtata in the Eastern Cape. From parents who were teachers. Both of my parents were teachers, and my mom at some point decided to become an entrepreneur, and she set up a general trading store. And I would say that she's probably one of the key people that kind of changed the lives of our family. Overall, within my family, about 10 of us, so I'm one of those 10, and I'm a number 7. In that list of 10 people.
Wow.
Of course, my dad divorced and married my mom, so I am the firstborn of my mother.
Okay.
Yes. And she, through her entrepreneurial work, was able to take us, almost all of us, through university. And that's why I'm saying she impacted the family in a much, much positive way. Mm. So through all of that, I ended up studying at St. John's College in Amtata, not the one in Johannesburg. And I was fortunate to represent South Africa in 1980 in the International Science Olympiad, which was held in London. So I was one of the top students in math, science, and biology in South Africa. So I was one of those students who were selected to represent South Africa there. And that, to me, that's probably the starting point of my, you know, technology, you know, kind of like career, you know, because that's where I decided to move into engineering and mechanical engineering.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So I had a very brief look at your LinkedIn profile this morning, and I see you studied at Yale University. Was that when you finished school, did you go and study?
No. That actually happened much later when I joined IBM after working for a company called NAMPEC. I was doing some consulting work in NAMPEC in the manufacturing space. And the work that I was doing there actually got noticed by IBM, who Lou Gerson at the time, globally, had changed that company to move away from being a box company to being much more solution-oriented. And they were trying to attract people that were, I would say, experts in specific industry verticals. And my area of expertise was in manufacturing side, so they brought me in for that. So I joined IBM. So I ended up spending 12 years with IBM.
Oh, wow. It was a long time. Okay.
Yeah, it was a long time. And it was IBM who then nominated me to a program run by Yale called Yale Wells Fellows. Once a year, Yale select globally between 12 and 15 mid-career executives, and then they have to then spend some time at Yale, mm-hmm. and I was one of those 15 in 2004.
Okay. So what was the course specifically?
The course is really about leadership. You know, it takes people who are already in mid-career, and expose them to some of the challenges that the world is facing. Mm-hmm. It's more like Yale is taking a bet on these people, saying that these guys may end up holding influential positions in the future. Mm. Let's sensitize them to some of the things that we believe as good leaders they need to be doing in the future. Mm. You know, things like poverty, things like environment, energy, democracy. You know, you get exposed to all of these global issues so that when you lead, you're not just leading purely from a profit perspective, but be able to think about how to impact society in a positive way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you seem to like companies that are going through massive change. I mean, IBM at the time was transitioning from a big hardware company into a services and solutions company.
Yes.
You then went to Microsoft in 2008 to head up the South African operation. Microsoft has been through massive changes in that period of time as it moves to cloud, into a cloud computing paradigm.
Yes.
And then, of course, you went to MTN, which was facing its own set of big challenges. Mm. Is that a deliberate thing?
It is quite a, I think it's linked back to my preference of a career being the engineer, the profession that I ended up being. I'm attracted largely to solving problems, that is at the core of who I am, and that drives me. Mm. And if you look at IBM, when I went overseas, I spent about 4 years overseas with IBM, and they attracted me there to go and build the small and medium-sized business of IBM. Mm. IBM was not in that space, and here I was trying to find a way of helping this company to become relevant in a completely new space, Mm. And then they asked me to come back in South Africa. South Africa was completely out of line with the strategy of the company and was losing big time when it comes to services. So I came back and I fixed the global services business of IBM. It was at that time that Microsoft ended up firing almost its entire leadership team in South Africa, and I was asked to come in an environment where almost the entire leadership team had just disappeared. I was asked to come and just rebuild the business. I spent about 6 years with Microsoft. Yeah. Through that time, we also went through this change from a licensing company to being a cloud services company.
Mm.
And the attraction of MTN is exactly that. The problems, in more especially MTN South Africa, the challenges that company was facing linked to poor customer service largely, plus its inability to transform into, a much more of a data-led company.
Mm.
And that attracted me. But this challenge is the one that is, for me, when I look at it, it's going to take me for a long time to rebuild this company.
I think a lot of people were surprised that you left MTN when you did, because you were midway through this transformation process. You hadn't completed what you wanted to do there.
No.
But you decided that you were going to go to Ultron. It must have been a difficult decision to make.
It was not the easiest of decisions. I always, if you look at all of the projects that I've done, I always complete them. And this one, I was like halfway through. Mm. I could see maybe another 18 months at most. Then I would say I'm done with the transformation of MTN South Africa. But when you look at that, you then ask yourself, when you are done with this thing in 18 months time, what's next for you? And then you look, maybe I will be sent to Nigeria to go help there, or in Iran or elsewhere, and that's great, but is it something that would be challenging for me? versus then this thing come, this opportunity of Ultron come, and you look at the scale of it, I can see it taking me, you know, 8 years, because it's not just about rebuilding Ultron. It's also, it's not about just turning it around. It's also about then taking whatever you've got and scaling it up, not just in South Africa, but across the various geographies. And this, to me, was a much more attractive challenge, and that is going to continue to keep me challenged for a number of years.
I mean, you must have had exposure in the past to Ultron, I would imagine, particularly through Microsoft. But how did this come about? Did the Fantas approach you? Were you approached by a corporate headhunter? How did you come to this business?
So maybe let me just go back a little bit. When I was a head of MTN business, I joined, I think about 2014, I joined at a group level as the head of the enterprise business of Microsoft. One of the things that I was doing there was also to be looking at possible acquisitions.
Yes.
And this is one of the companies that we did a comprehensive due diligence as a company. And through that, I got exposed to what it can do, some of the areas of possible areas of improvement, and areas where you feel that this company has got such a huge potential. So I got exposed to that, both to the leadership team here and also the capabilities of the business. But how did it come about? It came about not because of that engagement. It was I was headhunted. I got a call, I think around July last year, and we started the process. I think there were many people who were part of that process, and maybe 7 months later, it's only then it got concluded.
Okay. So here you are, 4 days into the job. So, I guess I can't press you on specific operational issues in subsidiaries, but maybe we can talk about more of a strategy for the Ultron Group going forward. So there's been a lot of change here prior to your arrival. Robbie Fenter, the former CEO, has sold off a lot of the assets, particularly in the PowerTech division, and the strategy of the group is to refocus as an ICT business going forward. Looking at the way the group is structured at the moment and what's inside the group, is it optimal now? I know there are a couple of legacy issues inside, or assets inside PowerTech that still need to be sold off, but just looking at the broad set of companies here, it almost looks a bit like a conglomerate, if you like. do you need to get some of those assets to work better together? Is there a need to restructure the way the business is structured? Your sort of broad thoughts.
So I think this opportunity to bring a new CEO, it gives this company an opportunity to relook at itself and say, we then have to ask ourselves. This is what I'm asking. If I were to be starting this business today, how would it look like? And it's that is driving everything that I'm doing right now, And looking at the head office, is this how the head office should be looking like? Should we be having all of these functions, and which functions are we missing? Starting from there, and then you then go to the operations themselves and say, starting now from the customer, say, okay, what is happening with our customers? Our customers are going through huge digital transformation as customers, and then what is their buying behavior? And you'll find that most of these customers, they are in fact reducing the number of suppliers in what is called supplier consolidation. And with the few suppliers that they have, they would like to buy more from those suppliers. As a result, end up getting more discounts because of the volumes. Then you look at the way we are doing things as Ultron. We actually, at this time, we very much a point solution company, delivering this point and that. So when it comes to the customer, to the customer, we appear as a point customer, as a point solution provider versus a total solution provider. So starting from that insight, what we are saying, we need to then restructure ourselves to be in the line, in line with the way our customers are buying. So we like to have people in front of those customers that are representing the full breadth of Altron versus representing the point solutions that we are providing. So that will have a huge change when it comes to the way we are operating as a company. Mm. How we are going to look like, I cannot tell you at this moment in time. I would like that to together with my exco and a number of leaders in the business to redesign the operating model. Mm. But clearly, the way we are looking at this time is not the best way.
Right. Okay. There are disparate businesses here. So you've got things like a set-top box manufacturing,
yes.
UEC. You've got a vehicle tracking, asset tracking company in, yes. In Altec Netstar. Mm. Then you've got Bytes Technology Group, which is much more of a traditional IT services business. Mm. Are there compatibilities between these businesses?
There are. If you look at what we have, take out the PowerTech. The PowerTech is going to be out, completely
yes.
out, right? You are then left with Altec and Bytes. Mm. Within Bytes, within Altec, there are a significant number of businesses there that can connect well with Bytes. For example, the Bytes systems integration. In my opinion, all of these things should be together with Bytes, and others. But there is one that stands out that it does not quite fit there. That is the Netstar, you know. So for me, that is one of the decisions that we as a team need to be looking at. Okay, can we take? How do we grow this Netstar business? Can we grow it within South Africa? Can we take it in other geographies? If not, maybe does it fit well with the kind of future that we want to have, an ICT future?
Mm.
And if it doesn't, then what is it that we need to do? I don't want to give answers right now,
sure.
but it's clearly something that we need to be looking at as a team.
Okay, so your message is you're going to do a full review of the whole group?
Yes, complete review.
Top to bottom.
Yes.
Okay.
Review in terms of the structure of the business, the strategy of the business, the operating model of the business. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So is that your number one priority right now?
My number one priority is I will start with the strategy, and then link to that will then come up with the operating model.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I would like to have in the next 90 days.
Okay. Mm. Now, this business for the last 50, 51 years, however long it's been around,
yes.
it's 51 years now, has been controlled by the Fenter family.
Yes.
Bill Fenter was the founder and CEO. Now, Robbie Fenter was CEO. The Fenter family still has not as much control as they used to have, but they still exercise a fairly significant amount of control in this business, and they will be represented on the board of directors. You must have had discussions with them about that and how you'll handle the relationship with them. I mean, were there concerns when you started discussions, when you joined the business, that you might have the family breathing down your neck and second-guessing what you do?
Mm-hmm. I think if you're taking any role, needs to always be looking at okay, what are some of the possible challenges that I would face taking this role, and how would I address them? And the best way of addressing some of these things is address them at a structure level so that you don't continuously have to address them. And the way we felt that we have to do it is through having a board, a board that is representing all of the interested parties, and a board that is not going to be dominated by any one player. So we currently have a board of about 12 people, and within that there will be two Fenters, and we clearly would benefit from their experience, but at the same time, one of the things that I'm bringing in is to have a new board members that have got a deep understanding of the ICT space, because for me that's where we're going, and that's the value. There's a value of thinking, looking at the past, which the mentors will bring, but also we need the value of people who will be helping us as we move forward. You know, that's that. And we also have within that board value capital partners,
yes,
who have invested significantly in this business, and they are bringing another value from the finance perspective, from things like possible acquisitions as we go forward, you know, what kind of acquisitions should we be bringing. So I'm comfortable with that board structure.
Mm.
When you look at the exco that I am leading, we do not have a center within that exco.
Mm.
So when I look at the two things, I don't see a problem at all.
Okay. And in your discussions with Robbie Fenter, I imagine particularly,
yes,
what has his communication been to you in terms of what his involvement is going to be in the,
yes,
company going forward?
So Robbie, he's right now is currently traveling. He's going to be back, and within 2 months, he's got a 2 months notice,
mm-hmm,
and within 2 months, he's going to be moving to the UK and join his family there.
Ah, okay.
You know, so that's where he's going to be. He will continue to be, of course, there and non-executive director,
mm,
of the company. And you do know that Dr. Bill Fenter, he resigned as the chairman of the board, and yeah, so he, mm, is around here. If we need his advice on things, of course, mm, connect with him.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's a proper handover.
It's a very good proper handover. Mm. I mean, I sat with Dr. Fenter, and he shared with me, you know, he's you know, where this company comes from, and he kind of like was like saying, okay, I'm giving you this baby, you know, you need to be running with this baby, but look after this baby.
Yes,
you know? But
yes,
I trust you to take care of this baby,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and so that I can, you know, look at it and appreciate it from far as it's growing,
mm,
you know, and I appreciated that, and he shared some of the things that you know, you think that, you know,
mm,
looking at some of the mistakes that the group has done in the past, and taking, being self-critical around those, and to me that actually showed that we are at a point where there is a realization that to have an independent leader of this business is going to be good for all shareholders.
Mm. Mm. Okay. Mm. So you mentioned that one of your focus areas is going to be expansion outside of South Africa. Is that going to be through acquisitions? How much of the group's business is already outside of the country?
Mm. Today, there is not too much that is outside of the country. We're operating, I would say, maybe up to 10% of the group is outside the country. We're all over in Australia, a little bit in Europe, through Bytes UK. We also, in South Africa, I mean in Africa, operating in a number of countries in East Africa,
mm,
through our connection with the Xerox, we've got a number of we've got a distribution rights across Africa of those products, for example,
mm,
but it's not structured.
Mm.
By that I mean you're not going to get to a country and find that there's a country manager looking after the Bytes business, except for the UK, you know.
Mm.
But when I'm talking about geographic expansion, I'm talking about taking a model that's working here, a structure, and that is the structure that we'll be putting, let's say if we are in Kenya,
mm,
we'll put that structure. And we'll have similar offerings that we have in South Africa being delivered by our company in Kenya, for example. And if we do not have those capabilities, that we cannot just move them, we will be looking at acquisitions.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
Okay. Mm. Now, with your background at MTN in telecommunications,
yeah,
convergence was de rigueur a few years ago. Everyone was talking about ICT, IT and telecoms merging together, convergence.
Mm-hmm.
Altron sold its telecommunications asset back to the mobile operators, Autopage Cellular.
Mm.
Do you see any need for Altron to get directly back into the telecommunications business?
I honestly don't see the need. I see the need for us to work very closely with the mobile operators. You know, the way I see the world is very much that of ecosystems. We are part of this ICT ecosystem. And I do not necessarily have to be owning each and every part of that. One needs to leverage some of it. You know, some of it will come from from the mobile operators. Let's work closely with them. Mm-hmm. You know, but where I would like to see Altron playing is more on the digital services, you know, and maybe this is where we will find ourselves competing with some of the mobile operators in the future.
Great. I want to talk a bit about, and I know we've spoken about this in the past, and I'd like to get your updated views now that you're no longer part of an operator, if your views have changed at all. I don't know if they have. But you've, in historically, since the white paper, the ICT policy white paper was published, I think it was in August or September last year, you've been very critical of it. You've particularly the suggestion of the wholesale open access network and that it be given exclusive access to all future 4G or high demand spectrum allocations by the regulator. You're no longer part of MTN. Do you remain as critical as of the white paper as in the past?
I remain as critical. My decision on my analysis or assessment of the white paper was not necessarily linked to the fact that I was at MTN. I was looking at it more at, is this the right thing for our country? You know, that's the starting point. Given the fact that we've got so many challenges, we need to be developing as a country. How is this policy going to be helping with that effort? And I came to the conclusion then that it is not necessarily going to be helping at all. In fact, it is taking us back. And to create a single wholesale open access network, that is where I had problems. Wholesale access, wholesale open access network, in general, I do not have a problem. The single, that is the problem.
The monopoly aspect.
The monopoly, that's the piece. That because you immediately are going to be losing on the competition, on driving down the cost because of competition. Also, what is the incentive going to be around you know, continuously investing with the latest technologies, or so all of that. Plus, why are we doing this? We're all doing this thing because we're trying to drive down the cost of communication. Are the cost of communication going to go down just when we have one player? I do not think so. You know, we have seen in the past that monopolies are not necessarily the best one to drive down costs.
Okay. So I think you were still at MTN when the model was put forward by the operators.
Yes, we worked on that.
There was a Deloitte document that was put forward to the ministry, a proposal of a hybrid model. I suppose you could call it a compromise solution. Is the hybrid model the best way to do to go forward? Do you think? Maybe just explain to people listening to this podcast, the hybrid model involves still creating a wholesale open access network, making commitments. The mobile operators making commitments to buy a certain amount of capacity from that wholesale open access network, while the mobile operators still get access to exclusive use spectrum assignments in future.
Yes. So when I look at it, we always need to find solutions to things. And we have a government that is driven largely by political objectives. And we need to understand what those political objectives are. In this case, it is more about inclusion of in particular black people, that if you look at the current industry, they don't seem to be participating in this industry. So there is that challenge that the government is saying, we've got an industry that is thriving, but it's somehow blacks are not included within that industry, and we need to find a way of including them. So we need to be sensitive to that and understand it. Hence we said, okay, let's find a solution. It may not be a perfect solution, but let's find a solution through this hybrid model. In this hybrid model, you will have a wholesale open access network where black individuals can go and buy shares there up to the value of about 50%, and they will be owning this entity. And we, as mobile operators that have long been in this industry, we would guarantee to buy from them at least 30% of whatever they are producing to make sure that that entity is sustainable. And to me, that is a great example of how South Africa works, you know, the ideal of South Africa, where you say, okay, let's find solution, let's make a plan, you know. It's not made not the ideal, but we understand the challenges. Let's work together to bring some of the people into our industry. We'll guarantee to have an entity that is sustainable. And I think that's the best solution that we have at this moment in time.
Okay. And in your discussions with the ministry, as I guess both as MTN when you were there and as the broader industry, are you confident that the government will adopt this hybrid model? I mean, there have been suggestions from the minister that the policy is final and it's not open for negotiation, and we're only here to talk about implementation. That seems to be a hardline approach to the white paper. Are you confident that there are actually going to be changes?
Look, you can read his statement in different ways.
Okay.
In a different way, you can say that this solution that we're coming up with is trying to find a way of implementing his ICT policy, you know, and if you're reading it like that, we still have the policy, but at the same time, you know, the way we have implemented it is much more pragmatic.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Okay. I suppose what the politicians need to do is to come up with a model where the WOAN or the Wholesale Open Access Network is still there, and a regulatory or policy environment in which that WOAN is supported so that it doesn't fail.
That is correct. I think that's what they need to look. I do not necessarily want to be saying here. I don't want to put the pressure. Already too much pressure on the minister.
Okay.
I think he's listening to the industry, and he has clearly accommodated our proposal, and let's see what comes out of that, you know. And it's encouraging that with all that has been said, he's still open to taking the suggestion that we have put as an industry.
Okay. Yeah. While we're talking about politicians and politics, I want to spend a bit of time talking about the state of South Africa at the moment.
Yes.
There's been a huge high drama in this country in the last 2 weeks. We've had the finance minister fired, his deputy fired, a cabinet shakeup, a lot of drama, calls for the president to resign. You're a very important business leader in South Africa. What's your view of what's going on?
Look, I must say, as a South African first, before being a leader, as a South African, I am concerned. I'm concerned that we've got a country that has been downgraded by one of the rating agencies, and is likely going to be downgraded by the others to junk status. And the consequences of that is that there's going to be less money to go and address the huge amount of challenges that we have as a country, you know. And that is a problem for our country. Already, if you go back last year, we had students that were crying for kind of like free education. And now, if we're going to even have even less money to address some of those challenges, what's going to happen to those students? You know, it's just one example. You know, so what has happened, it is something that should have been avoided. I do not necessarily think we should have handled it as a country this way. But this is where we are right now. We need to be looking at solutions. But what I would say, maybe to take one step back, my big concern is on the rhetoric that I keep hearing, because at the back of what has happened is this thing called radical economic transformation, and what that means for me is probably close to why some of us are opposed to the ICT policy, because it is more about breaking what is working in order to accommodate new players versus coming out and saying, how do we create the space and allow the new players to come in and play, and whilst protecting what is working. you know, because what we are going to start to see, people saying, how there's too much concentration in the financial service sector. Let's not allow the banks to also be in the insurance space. Let's break that up, you know. And in the process, we think that we are creating, we are coming up with radical policies. And yet they're not. We're actually adding inefficiencies into the system. At the end of the day, the consumers will have to pay for all of that. I look at good examples here in South Africa of, for example, a business connection. BCX was formed by these two twins, Isaac and Benjamin. Another example would be Adapt IT. You know, it was formed by Sbu Shabalala. And none of those people said, no, let's go and break IBM, let's go and break Dimension Data in order for us to create space for us. No, they looked at ways and means of coming up with something unique, something that would help them to stand out there and be competitive. And that is what we need to be encouraging as a country, versus saying, let's take from the people that have done something, let's take away from them, you know, and that is going to damage this country. Where we really do need to understand and be careful of this radical economic transformation. In the short term, people may feel that they're getting benefits, but in the long term, we would have destroyed this economy.
So how do we get out of the spiral that we appear to be in? What's the solution? Big question, I know.
It is really a big question. I think there is nothing that is a substitute for dialogue, you know. We currently have a number of parties taking certain positions. We need to go back to the old spirit of South Africa of saying, how do we build this country together? How do we have business talking to the politicians, talking to civic organizations, say, how do we come up with something that works for all of us? So I'm saying, let's reconnect. Good thing, this thing that it has done, we see that now business is talking to labor, and business is also talking to the politicians, and that is a good thing. It can only be a good thing. But let's talk to each other with the view of coming up with solutions. I do not have easy answers to this, but through dialogue, we've got smart people in this country. Let's allow them to engage and come up with solutions.
It's certainly an interesting time to be alive in this country, I think, especially with the marches planned for tomorrow, etc. So,
it is an interesting time to be living. It's sad in certain ways, because again, you start to listen to some of the things people are saying, talking about white monopoly capital and this, and it's like some of the fault lines of this country are being exploited for certain benefits. But the problem with that is that if immediately you move along that, you think of what has been happening in other countries where people have been exploiting the tribal fault lines, and where are those countries in? So we need to try and arrest this thing before it becomes a huge problem. And the good thing is, at least a number of us are able to see it. We need to be vocal about it, and we need to continue to talk about it.
Do you think business is speaking up enough?
I've just been seeing, when I look at BUSA and I look at business leadership, South Africa, its representatives over the last 2 weeks, they have been saying. But I think as individual businesses, not just through the associations, we need to start to talk about what we believe is right for our country.
Okay, great. Well, Mteto, it's very clear that you are passionate about it and are prepared to talk out when you see the wrong things happening, which is, I think, good.
Thank you so much.
Mteto, thanks for joining us on the Tech Central podcast today. It's been a fascinating discussion, and all the best of luck in your new role as Altron CEO. And if people want to get hold of you, you're quite active on Twitter, aren't you?
Yes.
What's your Twitter handle again?
It's Mteto N.
Mteto N.
Yeah.
So if you want to find out what Mteto's up to and give him a follow on Twitter, that's his handle. Thanks so much for your time today and all the best.
Thank you so much, Duncan.